wherever you may be listening to this around the world, close your eyes for a moment, even if you're driving, just for a moment, and picture Table Mountain, beautiful blue skies, a serene day in the mother city, and two fairly good-looking young gentlemen who are probably the only people in Cape Town today who'll tell you that this is the second best city in South Africa, because my guest on Dan Really Likes Wine is my fellow Gautenger, or at least he was until recently, Vikas Human, now resident of Cape Town. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Dan. Thanks for having me today.
It's a very different world, this. We spent most of our time getting to know each other with the gentle, zen-like rhythms of minibus taxis jumping red lights and fender benders on Jan Smuts outside Marble, Johannesburg. You've been down, what must almost be a year now?
No, 6 months.
Six months. That's how much we've missed you. Are we adjusted? Have we found life in Cape Town to our liking?
Yeah, I must say, moving down to Cape Town, a much different scene, different restaurant scene down here, different people, very different working culture as well. But, I mean, there's a bit more traffic than Joburg and a tad bit more slow as usual. But, I mean, you're just taking the time and look at the mountain as you're driving traffic in the morning.
Doesn't have the potholes or the charm of Johannesburg, but it's not a bad place to call home. And it was quite a big adventure because having set up and had so much success with Marble and the attendant restaurants in Johannesburg, this was always going to be an interesting one because Cape Town is the city of restaurants, as everybody in the restaurant industry in Cape Town will tell anybody in Johannesburg who's listening, because they don't believe we have any restaurants in Johannesburg. But to come down as this big name, both chef and restaurant, to Cape Town, to the waterfront, and set up. Exciting, yes, but also quite daunting.
Yeah, look, it was a very, very scary process. As you know, there's a lot of competition down in Cape Town, but we came down as Marble. We are different, and we think that Cape Town definitely had the space for this kind of restaurant. Something slightly different. It's not fine dining. It's more of a luxurious offering. It's contemporary dining in a sense with a great wine list where people can come twice a week, three times a week if you really want to. And that's what Marble's about. That's what we've established in Johannesburg and that's what we're establishing down in Cape Town.
Now, you are here very much under false pretenses because whenever you are introduced, it's the general manager or the man running the restaurant. Whenever you're really doing is keeping a close eye on your wine cellar and getting other people to do stuff because that is the passion and that's how we've always known each other. And for those who don't know the story of Vikas Human, you are a South African sommelier of the year. You've got all sorts of crazy qualifications when it comes to wine. Go back to the start because it was out in the cradle of humankind, wasn't it, where you first discovered that wine was something you quite liked?
Yeah, crazy. It was, that's almost, geez, 15, maybe 16, or 15 years ago. And that was a Forum Harmony and Roots restaurant. Yeah, basically started off as a front desk person, taking reservations daily and doing room checks and working my way up into the kind of restaurant scene and being a past manager. And from there, basically had my first sip of wine and that's where the bug bit.
Was it an actual bang, the light bulb goes off? Oh my goodness, this is incredible. Or was it a slow and gradual understanding that wine was in your veins?
No, I still remember probably a tasting until today. I was sitting in this private dining room in Forum Harmony and there were chefs around and there was a sommelier sitting around, Kite and Meissner at the time. And they were talking about different food and different flavors in the wine. And I couldn't quite, what's going on here? Like, are they adding things to wine? What's happening? And essentially, that's kind of where the bug bit. I think I went home that night and the next day I drove off to a liquor store and bought as much wine as I can and just opening bottles of wine at home. And from there, that's basically when Francis Kruner said to me, look, there's a gap in the market for young sommeliers in South Africa. He's starting to get off the floor. So step up and take the position. And that's, you know, I'm more of a specialist than a generalist. So specializing in something is what I like to do. And that's when the wine game started for me.
You might not remember this, but we were at a wine event together. It was at Hyde Park. It was the Sommelier Selection, the fabulous Dariel Robertson, who's wonderful and terrifies us all at the same time, had put this event together. And I'd gone a little early to do some filming and do some tasting, mostly tasting. And you opened a bottle of wine and you lifted the glass up to your nose. And in the matter-of-fact manner in which somebody might say, oh, the weather's nice today, you said, freshly opened can of tennis balls. And I thought, what a pretentious git. There is no way that, and then I sniffed it and it was a can of freshly opened tennis balls. There is a gift that you have. Is that something that you feel was always there? Was it something you could learn? Was it in the family genes?
oh, geez, my family did not drink very good wine when I grew up, to be very honest. But it must be somewhere in the family genes. Since I basically started getting into wine, my parents and my brother also got into wine. And we started up a small little business in Pretoria as well, where we distribute a bit of wine. And since then, the wine bug has really bit them as well. I think they've kind of strayed away from their normal day jobs and just focus on drinking wine and selling wine at the moment. So, but yeah, I believe it's somewhere there in the genes. I like to, as I say, specialize in things, and yeah, once that bug bit, it's another world open for me.
For me, it's not just the palate though. You've got to have this extraordinary memory, because if I look at probably the greatest palate I know in South Africa is Michael Fridgeon, and he will pick up a glass of wine and it'll be a 1989 Burgundy, and he'll give it a bit of a nose and he'll look at it, very similar to one I drank from an adjacent vineyard on a yacht with Sophia Loren in 1976, and he just remembers it perfectly. And so not only has he got the ability to pick up exactly what a wine is, he also knows where it comes from, where he's had it before. He's got that ability to remember. How important is that for you?
Very, very important. The memory bank when it comes to wine, not only with tasting and with studying, is so important. Making that connotation of, where have I smelled this before? Where does the smell come from? Whether it was in a supermarket when you picked up a dragon fruit for the first time, it's really important to remember where that smell comes from. Because if you don't teach your brain what you are smelling, you'll never make this connotation in any other wine that you pick up. So the memory bank is very, very important. And there is just some wines that takes you back to a place where you were at a farm one day. And that's the beauty of living down in Cape Town at the moment, is you'll be able to go to the people's, to the winemakers' farms, and stand in, get a sense of place. You can almost sense now, why is the vineyard facing False Bay and how the cool influence is coming off the ocean. So, and that really creates the memory bank, and you understand the wine so much better.
You have all of these accolades that you've picked up over the years, and you get to go into these competitions, and they're competitions that terrify mere mortals, because it's not, is this white or is it red? It is this an Uzbek Chardonnay, or is it in fact a Malawian Pinot Gris? It's the Olympics of wine when you go into these spaces. Do you still get terrified by all of this?
I mean, yeah, blind tasting, when everyone just puts a glass in front of you, it's always quite a shaking thing, because you have so many accolades and you think, poof, geez, have I now called this completely wrong, or am I going to call it 100% right? But if you're in that competition mode and you study and you sit, and it's really on the day as well, where you really just get so focused and understand, cool, this is what I'm doing. I'm focusing, I'm tasting wine, and you really just almost walk like a horse, not looking what's left or right. You're focusing on one thing and just listening to your mind and what you're smelling and what you're tasting. And as you said, Fridgeon, making that connotation is like, where have I smelled this before? Does it take me to a certain place? It's still quite daunting and scary, but if you just put your mind to that, and I really sometimes, when a sommelier brings me a glass of wine in the office, and he says, I just opened this on the floor. What is it? You know, I really have to just put everything down what I'm doing, close the laptop. I sit for a minute and I really go through my Smottl's Quartermaster's tasting grid. And I mean, 80% of the time you do call the wine. I mean, you don't call the wine specifically, but at least there's a varietal and a vintage and area, which is kind of correct. So
most people see you as this lovely, charming, delightful person. I know that that's anything but the truth, because every time I've eaten at a restaurant where you're on the floor, Marble in Johannesburg, you might have been at Saint, now Marble down in Cape Town. In fact, you did exactly this to me the last time I was here. You don't even say hello to me. You're this ruthless bully. You walk up, you put a glass of wine in front of me, and you walk away, and you come back 5 minutes later, and you just look at me, and you want to know what it is. And there is no look of greater disappointment than Vickers looking at you and you've got the bottle of wine wrong. But that's because I'm a bit of a wine geek and I love it and I really enjoy that sort of game we play. You can't do that with most people, because wine is a scary place. It's intimidating for most people. So what is the transition from Vickers, who's this walking encyclopedia of wine, to the person who's just coming to the shop and the extent of their wine is, I quite like Merlot. How do you get that person comfortable? How do you find their happy place with wine?
Just to get back to you, I'm not that ruthless on the floor. You recently just got your WSET level 3. So I always just like to keep my students on their toes. So
Fair enough. Anyone
who walks into the restaurant, whether you're a winemaker or a wine student, I will put a glass of wine in front of you. And you can ask Duncan Savage or Donovan Roll. I've done it to them as well. So
Fair
that's
enough.
My fair trade, just to keep my students on their toes. But yeah, I mean, it's, I say this to all my fellow sommeliers down here in Cape Town as well, is the most important thing is to listen to the customer at the end of the day. We're not here to sell you a specific bottle of wine. And I made this mistake very early in my sommelier career where I chose a bottle of wine that I thought I was, that I really enjoyed and I really liked it and had a beautiful label and it was trending at the moment. And that would be the only mission at the evening, is to sell that bottle of wine, because that bottle of wine meant so much to me. I had such an affinity with that wine. And then on some of the tables, the wine worked beautifully. And on some of the tables, the people were not really disappointed, but like not happy with the wine. And you think to yourself, where did I make the mistake? And that's when the kind of light switch went on for me, is to listen to any restaurant guest or anyone that walks into the restaurant. And they're there for a specific occasion and they drink a certain wine, or they don't drink wine, or they like a certain cocktail. And to get to the right bottle at the end of the day is to say, what are we doing today? Are we doing some white? Are we doing some red? Are we doing some bubbly? Are we doing some white? Cool. Why do we do Sauvignon, Chenin, and Chardonnay? And then from there, you ask a few more questions and you eventually get a wine for them, whether it's a wine at 300 Rand, whether it's a wine at 500 Rand, whether it's a wine at 25,000 Rand. It doesn't really matter to me. It's at the end of the day, is getting the right bottle of wine on the table and people leaving the restaurant and saying, you know what? That sommelier wasn't there to take my money. That sommelier was there to give me an experience. And that's what the whole Marble Hospitality is all about as well. It's giving our customers this beautiful experience while dining at any of our restaurants within the group.
And across that group, you've got some terrific sommeliers. You head up the team, but you've got a number of wonderful lieutenants in the different shops. Not every restaurant has that. Or if they do have a sommelier, not all of them are either quite as ethical or just maybe don't quite know as much. I think we're lucky to have amazing sommeliers in South Africa. But if you do go into a restaurant, and maybe it's not even in South Africa, there's a wonderful clip that's been doing the rounds again on social media, the second cheapest wine on the list, which is that old adage of how you pick from a wine list you don't really know. What is Vickers's guide to, I walk in, I know nothing on this wine list, how do I find my way around it?
So usually what I do is I hand out my personal number, people take a photo of the wine list, and I make the recommendation for them from there. But if you walk into a restaurant and there is no sommelier around, I mean, try and find your way around the wine list. As I said, yeah, the second wine on the list is not always the best wine, but look at something that you've maybe never heard of. It happened to me the other day where I've actually walked into a restaurant and myself and my wife ordered a bottle of wine which we've never heard of before, and eventually it didn't say orange wine on the bottle, but I didn't even see when they opened a bottle that it said skin contact, and we got a skin contact wine which we don't drink at all. But just in that sense of place where we said we're trying something new, the wine worked so well. So I mean, going to a restaurant and you don't know anything, at least go to kind of the area where you know you're familiar with a grape varietal. So let's say Sauvignon, Chenin, or Chardonnay. And within the Chardonnays or Chenins, let's say if you drink those two, choose something that you maybe don't know and go usually for something that is kind of in the middle class kind of price range. That is usually we will get a value for money wine that's on there. So,
and then by extension, the challenge of taking a bottle round for dinner. I have a lot of my friends, because I've got a large cellar at home, they're either, well, we can't take wine to Dan because he's got so much of it, which is not true, because whenever I'm traveling, my wife drinks all of it, or they'll try and find something that's off the beaten track or a little bit different. But more generally, what's your go-to if you're going out to dinner with somebody? Is there a standard range, or do you look at who you're going to dinner with and think, right, they're not going to realize that this is actually only 70 Rand a bottle, but it looks really cool?
Yeah, I mean, it also depends. Yeah, it depends who you go out with dinner to. But usually I phone the restaurant always beforehand. That's a very big sign of respect as a sommelier that I have, and ask if there's a corkage allowed. If there is, then I'll grab something from home if it's a very special occasion, or if there is something funky that I've tasted recently, I'll take that with me. But if there is nothing on the kind of, if you're not allowed to take corkage, I usually look at the list beforehand online already. So I really have a kind of sense of place where I am going for the lunch or for the dinner. But usually I try and always bring something a bit more kind of geeky-ish around, something that they might haven't tasted, like a Palomino or something that's kind of off the beaten track, like a Grenache Blanc or something like that.
Or on the subject of the lesser whites, a Colombard, which I think we might have. Sydney, is this the bottle we have with us?
Yes. So yeah, I bought a wine from Ian O'Dea today. I tasted with him a few weeks ago. And this was really one of the varietals that stood out for me, and really quite a cool history about this varietal within South Africa. So this actually used to be the most planted varietal in South Africa under the white wine varietals. And it was used primarily for the production of
brandy.
Yeah, exactly. For distilled spirits within South Africa.
Or for white wine that would give you a 6-day hangover.
Exactly. And it was kind of in the kind of 90s, I think, or the 80s, where the wine winemakers has actually discovered that this can actually produce such beautiful, still white wines and doesn't have to be used for the distillation of brandy. So I tasted it with Ian, and what an exceptional varietal. We'll pour some in the glass now. But
I'll actually pour while you talk. Pour us a glass. And this is Ian O'Dea is he's a really, really cool figure in the wine industry. I think he's been influential in quite a lot of winemakers, people like Ibn Sadi, chipped into their career. He's also provided 81% of all of the copy Greg Sherwood has ever written about wine. Greg is one of his many, many fans. And this is somebody who's he's a really cool winemaker. He's been making wine for a really long time. And although he's done plenty of other great wines, I feel this has become his signature. This is a space he really has made his own.
Yeah, I think Ian is, as you said, is a phenomenal winemaker, and he just focuses on what's new and handles every wine with so much care. What we got now here is the Coulombard. I mean, someone taking an offbeat white wine varietal, something that's going to sit at the bottom of a list, probably. It won't be up there with Sauvignon Blanc, Chenin Blanc, or Chardonnay. And will someone go that far down the list once they've passed Chardonnay and say, oh, I don't drink anything lower than that at all? I mean, that's usually how wine list is listed. There's always the kind of weird aromatic varietals are down below. But I mean, yeah, to produce something like Coulombard, and he says the name of the wine is Langpat, I mean, which translates to long road. Coulombard has come a long road in South Africa, but there's also a very long road to head towards it. When are people going to recognize that this is actually the second most planted varietal now in South Africa, because Chenin overtook it? And are we going to pick this up and drink it? So at Marble, I'll be pouring this by the glass. I mean, it's someone would look at you and say, why would you throw something or pour something that's completely unknown, or not completely unknown, but a bit sort of lesser known in South Africa to people by the glass? But it gives us as on the floor sommeliers and our staff and our waiters and our chefs to work with these kind of wines. And actually, you know, I give a glass to Matt, my head chef, and I said, you know what, this is what I've got. Does it inspire you for a dish that's got beautiful salinity on it? It's got beautiful kind of Yellowstone fruits on it. And it's actually all the way from Vredendal. So you have to drive halfway up to the Namakwa, basically, nature reserve, to get to the vineyard. But I mean, Langpat, that's what the name of the wine is.
There are two things I love about this. One is the breadth and intensity of the fruit that's been translated so wonderfully by Ian. And the other is that at 9 o'clock in the morning, you and I are able to drink this and call it work, when normally you would be taken off to sit in a room in a basement somewhere with 10 other people introducing yourself and beginning a 12-step program. So the wine industry is very, very helpful in that particular regard. It's a lovely wine, and thank you for sharing it with me. Before I do ask you one last wine question, I must ask on the starstruck front, there is something about sommeliers. I remember your doppelganger in London, Gareth Ferreira, the trainee vicus, bringing over a bottle of wine to me at Core, the 3-star Michelin restaurant in Notting Hill, and allowing me to finish off a bottle that he'd opened the previous day for David Beckham, because sommeliers just do have this ability to strike a chord with wine-loving superstars. Marble is awash with them. Who are some of the guys that you don't have non-disclosure agreements with, who you've poured some wine for, who you've been a little surprised by? Gee, I didn't expect this person to have such a love for or interest in wine.
Yeah, it's actually crazy who's actually been in the restaurant. I mean, I don't know which names I can mention, but I mean, Bastian Schweinsteiger was there the other day. Me going to Germany as an exchange student many years ago was just so cool to see someone like that in real life walk in. And as you said, I mean, you drank half of David's wine, but David Beckham, often a star in Marble Johannesburg, a really cool guy, and loves his wine and so down to earth. So we've had Katy Perry come through, Charlize Theron. Not say that all of them love wine, but probably the most wine lover that I really served was David Beckham. Really has a passion for wine, and I believe he also phones Gareth quite often and asks what he can buy to stock up his cellar.
Gareth says he's actually had to block David's number. He just will not leave him alone. In fact, that's why David and I don't speak, really. It's great to be able to share wine, whether it is with a superstar footballer or just somebody who's in the early stages of their wine drinking experience. It's really nice to watch people's eyes open and see them discover some wine on a journey that will never end. Ian O'Dea's Langpat is our own Langpat when it comes to wine, that long road of discovery. And even yours is not complete. Is there still a wine to be drunk, a wine region to visit, a wine holy grail that hasn't been reached yet?
A lot of them are. There's bottles of wine that are lying in marble cellar that I know one day we'll probably open that together with Gary and David. And I mean, yeah, studies is always there in the background. You want to push always a little bit further. It is difficult working for a big group like Marble Hospitality to still get home at night at 11 o'clock, try and open a book and get all the 21 Grand Crus of Alsace into your head. But it is there. And it is always there's a few mega bottles that I really want to still taste in my life, but it does happen. You know, I was at a lunch the other day and someone opened a wine that I really wanted to taste, and it's very cool to be able to still have that journey, and you know that the wines are there and you've always got that unicorn wine that's lying, and yeah, you'll get there. And it's as you said, the journey, it inspires us to drink more and get to that final end goal. And once you probably reach that end goal, there'll probably be another bottle around the corner.
Well, I know for now the goal is to just somehow get through this time in Cape Town so you can get back to Johannesburg. And when you do that, I have a wine that I think you still haven't had. You certainly had the last time we spoke about this. So when you get back to Johannesburg, dinner at Chateau Nickel, and by God, do I do a great fish finger, and we shall wash it down. I've got, I think it's the 03 vintage of the Cordoba, the Crescendo.
Exactly.
And you still haven't drunk that, have you?
I had a recent bottle the other day.
Oh, all right. I'll have to find
something
new then.
So that one ticked off. But I think the wines I haven't tasted is the GS. And I don't know if you have any of those lying around. I think you might have some. Dan never discloses. He relabels them and puts some Niederberg inside. But yeah.
I'll become an expert at recorking. Vegas, I have to say thank you, not just for being on the show, but you've been a big part of my wine education. You've pushed me to study and to engage and to fall even more in love with wine than I already have. There are many, many more glasses for us to have, but for those that we have already shared and for the good times over wine and for joining us on Dan Really Likes Wine, I am most grateful.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and to the next glass of wine I'll put in front of you.
Indeed. And if it's Vickers, the nine-figure check that comes with it. Vickers Human, running Marble in Cape Town, a South African sommelier of the year, a savant when it comes to wine, and one of South Africa's great wine champions.